Welcome to Nationals 101, a podcast by Nationals fans for Nationals fans. I'm Susan.
I'm Frank.
And hey, guys, how you doing?
Well, they can't answer, but I'll answer for you. I'm doing well. How
good.
Are you?
Good. Well, I mean, it could be better, but...
All right. Well, on this week's show, we're going to talk about opening day and the series against the Marlins. We're going to move on to the series against the Reds.
Ugh.
We're going to do a little preview of what's coming up, and we're going to talk about some of the other fun things happening along the sidelines here in... Natstown.
Yeah, things are happening.
But I guess we should start with opening day.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so it was the first opening day you didn't have to take off of work, which
was
very helpful. And we got down there early and saw the group. We saw a bunch of our friends, including people we see regularly and a bunch of people we met for the first time who were podcast listeners and blog readers, which was very nice to see so many of you guys.
It was very fun.
It was very fun.
I really like the tweet-ups that we have.
The tweet-ups are good, and I think that we'll just sort of...
This time last year, I was kind of like, what the heck is a tweet-up? I'm not participating in that, but it's really fun.
It was only the end of April that we started doing podcasting.
That's right.
So at this point, I think I was like meeting one or two people
That's right.
online,
yeah, you were.
And you were like, I don't really get it, but... Now it's much better.
Yeah, it's really fun. I really enjoy seeing everybody and with our tweet ups, the random things
that
we do.
Good friends, baseball. But it was a good opening series against the Marlins. The Marlins are more or less a AAA team playing in the majors.
Poor fishies.
I mean, they're not that bad. They have a couple of guys that can do a couple of things, and they're
Isn't this the team that was basically the Toronto Blue Jays? Oh, no.
All their guys are now, all their big stars went to Toronto. They dumped all of their big payroll
right.
to basically make
room.
So
this is basically a new team.
Kind of, yeah. That's sort of been the Marlins' MO since they've been in the league. They've disbanded two World Series championship teams. They won the World Series twice, and they've broken up those teams rather than pay for the stars and simply rebuilt with younger talent twice.
Huh.
So the fact that last year's Marlins team really underachieved compared to how much they spent, they decided rather than to give it a second round, which I don't know. I thought maybe there was a second chance in there with a lot of their skill players, but they decided forget it. They got rid of all their big contracts. They went cheap, and they now have a lot of room going forward to...
How does the baseball world see that? I mean, is it a good business move or is it just weird? Ooh. Is it like, I mean, what?
Yeah, that's a great question. We can talk about that for a minute before we talk about opening day. But the Marlins essentially in Miami, and I think by a lot of people, are sort of viewed as cheap in a weird way. The reason that the Marlins spent a lot of money last year was because they were opening a brand new stadium right in downtown Miami.
Ah.
And I think they were trying to really re-energize Miami and make it a Miami team more than a Florida team. They were the Florida Marlins. And they really sort of pursued a lot of big names. And so I feel like the Miami group, the Miami fan base, a lot of people feel kind of betrayed because they sort of – all this effort was put and energy put into it. And then on top of a bad year, which happens – they got rid of everybody, and
right.
they're basically the same old Marlins, which a lot of people are upset. If you talk to a pure baseball, you know, by the numbers thing, a lot of people think the Marlins did the right thing by the team by getting rid of a lot of these big payrolls, especially because they've spent all this money on a new stadium. There's a lot of money that they've taken from the city of Miami. There's a lot of weird things about the Marlins that don't seem to make sense as to how much. Last year, a lot of people were wondering where all this money was going to come from, and I think the answer might be, maybe they never really intended to keep these guys on long term anyway. So they weren't really – they only had to come up with the money for 1 year as opposed to 5 or 6 years.
Right.
So
I guess, you know, I mean, to me it sounds like it would make sense, especially with this situation. But you say that it's happened multiple times before, and that to me kind of sounds questionable.
Well, there's
– this is like their MO, like you said.
There's – I mean, there's no salary cap in baseball. There's not even really a salary minimum, I don't think. So it's a question of how much the team is making in money from its fan base sort of determines how much they spend on their team. So a big team, you know, a team like the Yankees that has a $1 billion television deal has a lot more money to spend. Same with the LA Dodgers, who now signed a big, you know, deal and they got brand new owners. So it's all about what the owners are willing
to
spend.
Is this where we plug the movie Moneyball and say go watch Moneyball?
It is kind of. It's exactly Moneyball in the sense that, except that the Oakland A's have been sort of, they have been really good at scouting and putting together winners with an even, you know, smaller payroll. Miami sort of builds up their payroll, gets a few stars, and then, you know, sends out a good team and then restructures all over. And they just also sort of seem happy with not really putting a winner on the field, you know, which is the Royals have had that knock and other thing. You know, there's a lot. It's more than one team that has had that knock. But that's kind of what happened with the Marlins. And that's why you get, you know,
swept 3-3.
That's why they got, you know, dominated by the Nationals in opening week. The Nationals didn't score a ton of runs their first two games. They scored 6 the third game. But you know, when you got like Hecheravia, who's like the other thing with the Marlins is a lot of their players aren't really just scrubs. They are guys that a lot of people think can develop into better players. And so they're just sort of out of their league now, but there's a chance that they'll get brought up to speed.
Sure. All right.
It's not just like full of people who really have no chance. And Giancarlo Stanton was held to. I did the math earlier. Did I write it down? No. He didn't get very many hits. He got one hit in the third game and a walk. None in the second game. And in the first game, he got a double. So he got 2 hits in 3 games and a walk. And that's a guy who can, you know, hit home runs to deep, deep parts of the field. He didn't look very happy with the Marlins either. He's sort of the lone star left over after all the other guys left. So there's a chance that he's not too happy.
I would guess so.
What were your impressions of opening day in the first series?
Oh, it was fun. It was cold.
It was a little cold.
I kind of wasn't really paying attention too much to the baseball just because it was cold. Colder than I was expecting.
It was packed, by the way.
It was very packed. What, 45,000 some?
45,274.
Yeah, which was wasn't that the second highest?
That was the second highest, and I think it was the highest regular season game
overall. Right,
because
the other one was the game 5.
Yeah, one of the
last year.
One of the postseason games was the biggest one overall. And for the first time in a while, opening day was not full of people who were Marlins fans, or not the Marlins fans, but it was not
a visiting team.
Right, yeah. So it was it was a huge sellout that wasn't full of Phillies fans.
Right. No, it was a really fun.
Last year was a good sellout too. I take that back a little. I think we outnumbered
who
the Reds.
Play last year?
Their opening day was against the Reds last year.
Okay. No, it was a fun game. Again, I didn't really pay attention too much to the baseball, other than I was excited to be in near the field. And
opening day is it's almost like a holiday. You know, you're spending a lot of time getting caught up with people you don't know. Then there's, of course, 45,000 people to negotiate. So
I think that was the other part is, I mean, last season we went to many, many games, like what 40, 50 games?
Yeah, yeah. And we'll go to that many this year.
Oh, yeah. But it's always opening day, and then we got to experience the postseason last year where it was just this influx of people.
A crunch of people.
Yeah, a huge amount of people. We got to the park early, like, what, 10:30?
Yeah.
It was so nice. There was barely anyone there.
Right.
You got Shake Shack right away.
Yeah. I wasn't hungry, but I couldn't pass up a no line at the Shake Shack.
But then when it starts getting crowded, that's when I'm like, I just want to go to my
seat.
We got up
from our seats once and missed 2 innings.
Right.
I mean, really,
couldn't go anywhere.
Just to get up and get there and then get back to our seats, which we didn't even do. We just said, forget it. Let's go downstairs. We missed 2 innings just kind of getting up once. So it's a packed day. It was a little less packed when we went again the second day.
Yep.
But still plenty of people. Certainly, you know, near 100,000 people, if not more. 45. Let me do the math really quick. 45 and 26 and 25. Yeah, that's just under 100,000 people. 100,000 people in 3 games, including weeknight games, which and a 4 o'clock Thursday start. So that's a pretty good.
We'll take
indication. My guess is it won't be as packed in the White Sox series. I'm wondering about the Braves series because it's a weekend series and it's against a really big team. But I think the takeaway, and we talked about this on the blog in the review of the Marlins series, was the Nats did exactly what they were supposed to do against the Marlins. Too many times over the last couple of years, the Marlins have, you know, somehow kept in games and won games that they shouldn't have against a Nats team that was generally better than them. This time the Nats were much better, and even though they didn't blow them out 3 games, they won all 3 games, and they kept the Marlins from doing anything. And it wasn't just the Marlins' ineptitude; it was also the Nationals played good baseball.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun to watch because we got to go to 2 of the 3 games, and it was really fun to watch and play good baseball.
And we saw our good friends Stefan Nats and Tyler Klipspex get married. Well, we didn't see them get married, but they came to the park married.
Congrats, guys!
So congrats to them. And
there was actually 2 couples that got
there
married.
There was, but we don't know the other people. Forget them. You know, whatever. They looked like they were lying about that. I'm sure they weren't. But we were very happy to see them there. So congrats to them and everyone else. Again, adding to the festivities of opening day. Yeah, and we also I also did the Red Porch Report. Speaking of lots of new fans, I talked to them and we talked our season prep. And we, you can go over to Red Porch Report, Google search them.
Yeah, and then I think did you mention
we talked about new fans,
Fans and ballpark etiquette and stuff like that.
We talked a little bit about that. You know, and you need new fans. You need 45,000 people there on opening day, because a lot of those people are going to sustain coming through the season, and that's how you keep a baseball team,
right?
In a city, you know, not that they're in any danger right now, but. You know, all the kids that come now are going to learn, you know, and they're going to learn not to do the wave.
I was going to say, I hope that they learn not to do the wave. Game 3 of the Marlins series, that wave was strong.
It was strong.
Oh, it was so strong.
It was happy hour, you know. It was basically the end of the week. I'm not condoning it. I'm just, as I said, you know, there might be less bad times to do the wave, but there's never a good time.
Yeah, it was frustrating.
Let's move on
to the Reds.
You want to talk about the Reds?
I don't know. I think we should. I think we need to. I think there are some things.
Look, the Reds are an exceptional team. It was weird. They almost this is almost like throwing, you know, throwing yourself, like you've just gotten out of the sauna, right, and you jump in an ice-cold pool. It's kind of like that was sort of the Marlins are really maybe the second worst team in baseball. They're in the bottom five, and they instantly went to not only played one of the best teams in baseball in the Reds, but went to the Reds Park, Great American Ballpark, to play them at home. So and the Reds had sort of warmed up against a decent team, the Angels. So they had maybe had already gotten their motors running against good baseball, but the Nats were clearly unprepared and
that was rough.
It was, and we watched the whole Friday night
game. And you scored the whole...
I scored the whole 15-0 debacle that was the Friday night game against the Reds.
Yeah.
But, you know, we said this, and I wrote the post about it. This is going to happen. It's going to be a blip in a season-long 162-game season. It's one game. If you lose by one or you lose by 50, it's just one loss. You don't get extra loss credit for getting blown out. I think Natstown is now at the place where there are enough new people that care about baseball that don't really have a handle on you can't deal that. And then there's a second tier, which I think we're in, where it really stings and it really hurts, but we can sort of joke about how much it hurts a little. And then I think there's a few classic people that are really, you know, zen about it and can be like, okay.
Shake it off.
Shake it off. And mostly the players can do that. But yeah, the Nats... Good. That's what happens when you play another team. That's basically the Reds are the same. They finished with 97 wins last year,
right?
And they also got better. They added Shin-Soo Choo, who absolutely
he was fantastic.
He ate up the Nationals all weekend, including Saturday and Sunday's games. And Todd Frazier is a very good rookie playing third base. He beat the crap out of the ball.
And what about Bailey, the pitcher?
Homer Bailey, I think I don't think he was lucky, but he had a really good game. I don't think Homer Bailey's that good.
Okay.
But Dan Heron had an awful game. Ugh. But as awful as Dan Heron's game was, the bullpen had a much worse game. And that was, you know, Heron gave up 6 runs, but they were still, you know, within, there was a point where they were down 6-0 and they were within a half an inch of tying it up at 6-3. So, and that's a baseball game at 6-3. So as poor as he played, it was the bullpen that I think cost them throughout the game. That not only lost them, that made that game so ugly, but I think lost them Sunday's game as well. And we'll get to that in a minute. Remind me.
So we play the Reds again at the end of April.
Right.
So like a 2 or 3 week spread.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a little disappointed that we don't play them later in the year.
Me too.
Because I feel like we're just all trying to figure it all out right now.
I think both teams are trying to figure it out. I mean, we opened against the Reds last year and played them a few weeks later as well. We did very well against the Reds last year, but a lot of those games were... Let me see. Last year, it was 3-2 was the Nats' home opener against the Reds. Then there was the Friday 2-1 game. One of those games was the Edwin Jackson complete game. Then they beat the Reds 4-1, and then they lost 8-5 on Sunday. So you look at those first three games,
they were pretty tight.
The Reds were right there. You know, the Reds were right there. And then we played them again in May, I think, the next month.
Okay.
And the Nats won that series as well, but it was also equally close.
So I'm wondering, as we look towards the next time that we meet the Reds at the end of April at Nationals Park, what are we going to be? I mean, obviously, we're hoping to just do better.
I mean, right, I think, but how do you do better?
But how do you do better? I mean, what do you look for? What do you try to really combat? I mean, hopefully not having to travel and being at home is going to be some
things.
Well,
not playing in the Great American Ballpark will help a little. Because
and I know that people were talking about, you know, oh, Great American Ballpark sucks. Why? I don't know why.
It's the Great American Launch Pad, because when you're in the Great American Ballpark, you know, the home run distances are much shorter than in Nationals Park or even bigger parks like, you know, old Shea Stadium.
So it makes it easier to get home runs?
All of a sudden, pop flies become home runs. Really, in the first game, certainly, at least two or three – okay, two home runs looked to me in the first game like the guy reached over the wall to grab it, and that's fan interference, and they shouldn't have been home runs anyway. But in Nationals Park, I'd say three or four of those home runs are at the back of the park, not – in the stands.
Mm-hmm.
So they could still be hits.
Right,
maybe they're
okay.
High off the wall and they become doubles, but they're not home runs.
Gotcha.
You know, very few of that first game any were, you know, definitely home runs. And so in Nationals Park, you know, maybe I'm sure the Nats didn't play well enough to win that game. Doesn't matter what park you were in. The Nats played a bad game.
No disputing that.
So they probably – but they wouldn't have lost 15-0 to the Reds. They might have won – they might have lost, you know, 5-0 to the Reds or something at home.
So being
in the park will be a plus, hopefully, for the Nationals.
So – but what do we need to – what do the Nationals look towards to the way to the Reds pitching staff, to the hitters that they're going to come up against? Like what do we need to do?
Well, the Nationals the first thing you do is don't panic and you just play your baseball game, because frankly, when the Nationals do play their baseball game, they're going to be a good team. So I think the first thing to do is not read too much into it. You know, they got beat by a good team. They knew they were a good team coming in. They did win one game. I think you look at the film and you look at the tape of the pitchers and the hitters. You try and do things. You say, okay, what worked against Joey Votto? What didn't? What happened to Johnny Cueto? They got into Johnny Cueto's head a lot.
Mm-hmm, they did.
Denard Span did a little thing where he stepped out of the box two or three times and said, you know, I'm just not going to let you take all the time you want. And I think that got under his skin, especially after
and I
want
to take a moment to say how awesome Denard Span is. I mean, he is really bringing it, and I'm loving it.
He is a monster.
And welcome back to Wilson Ramos, who who put a bomb out the other day.
Bombs out.
Yeah, and then, of course, Suzuki. So our two catchers are kicking
butt.
It's so great to see.
I think you could get
guys.
30 home runs out of the 8 spot this year between the two of them, which would be a nice little pop at the bottom of the order. Right. But
anyways, going back to
Denard. Yeah, no, I think the Nats need to I think what the Nats need to do to beat the Reds is just what they need to do to beat anybody. I don't think they have to game plan for the Reds all that much specifically. I think they need to, you know, Desmond has got to tie his shoes and stop committing errors, and that he's going to do it. He's not going to keep committing errors, but he's got to, you know. I think Danny Espinosa has gone out of his way. He's not struck out as much. He had a couple of big hits. I'm impressed with how he's playing. I think a lot of people were upset that he threw to home today. But, you know, he took a gamble. He thought he had the throw, and he could have saved a run. He could have saved the go-ahead run. So I'm not going to beat up on him for trying that. You know, you don't want to give up the 4-3 lead.
So it sounds like So it sounds like it just comes down to what they do for any competitor, for any game or series.
Yeah, they don't need to.
They just need to review the tape and study. And that brings me to another point. As we were talking and watching these games, I mean, there's an insane amount of actual studying that these players need to do off of the field. And I think of athletes, and I think, you know, conditioning and drill work and practicing and being on the field, practicing and doing all those types of things, getting ready to getting ready for the game. But there's that other element of actually having to hit the books.
Yeah,
basically.
You do. Well,
and
hit the video room. Yeah.
That just baffles me. I mean,
they get all the they'll have all next that's next time they come through, they play the Reds. They will have and this is also why any game that happens in April has no bearing on any game that happens in October, because as the season goes on, you get more and more video of all these guys. Now, a lot of the guys they saw, they had a lot of video from last year on, but they're going to get video of these pitchers, how they pitch, what their tendencies are. And then when you go, you know, you're getting ready for the game, you know, okay, Homer Bailey, he has three types of pitches. He has X, Y, and Z. I'm making this up. I haven't looked at Homer Bailey's pitch types.
But let's just say, clarification.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't want anyone to think, but if he has the curveball, the sinker, and the fastball or something, then you know, okay, these are the three types of things I have to look for. Now, that doesn't, you know, you can't be thinking about that when you're in the box taking a hack. You've got to be focusing on it going, you know, but it helps to know that these are the zones and the types of places where we're looking at. And similarly for pitchers, you know, so-and-so can't hit a curveball, you know, or this guy doesn't like, you know, fastballs inside. Or after you've thrown a couple outside, if you come back inside, he's more prone to take a big hack at it or something.
And I think it's just...
Or this is the last place you want to throw the ball.
Right.
Right.
Right. I just think it's really cool how there is that element of, you know, looking at a batter and saying when it's 3-2, he's likely to swing on anything. I don't, you know, just like those like hidden statistics, hidden little things, nuances of baseball that have just kind of popped into my head this past series where it's like, wow, there's actually a lot more, not legwork, but brain work that goes into it.
Speaking of Denard Span, four of his seven walks this year have come when he started 0-2.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where a pitcher can't look at him and say, okay, I've got him down 0-2. Let's throw him some junk and see if he swings at it, because Denard Span doesn't swing at it. You know, he's gonna let you throw bad pitches and just get on base, you know? And we're only just seeing him get started, and the team hasn't really, you know, it's such a small sample of six games.
Sure.
He's gonna do that a lot this year. And what's gonna happen is
people are gonna pick up on it.
Well, not just pick up on it, but you know, Jason Worth and Bryce Harper and Ryan Zimmerman are gonna start getting more hits after he does things like that. So suddenly, you know, hits are gonna score runs, home runs are gonna be multiple score home runs. Yeah. Oh, by the way, shout out to Bryce Harper for hitting two home runs in his first opening
Very
day
cool.
at bat, speaking of home runs. So the Reds and you know, look, the Reds are an excellent team. The Reds have the Reds might have a better lineup than the Nationals when it's all said and done. They really might. I think they do. They have very good pitching. They have a very competent bullpen. I think that they're probably as good or in that bubble of the top three or four bullpens, along with the Nationals and the Braves and stuff. So, you know, they're no joke.
No kidding.
I'm a little disappointed we're playing them in April too, because I feel like it'd be a more fun series
later in the year.
More stressful
Absolutely.
Series later in the year, but
a more true matchup. I feel that
you would really have them, you know, both in contention, both fighting for things. Here in April, it's like, you know, last April, the Nats got swept by the Dodgers, and that was the first series they lost, and it was ugly, and it was didn't feel good or anything. You know, that happened at the end of April instead of the beginning of April. But you know what? The Nationals beat the Dodgers later that year. They won 2-1 in their series. I think it was 2-1. Might have been 2-2. No, it was 2-1. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Sorry, Podcast Nation. And then the Dodgers didn't make the playoffs. So, you know, you can – whatever, right? What happens in April stays in April, basically.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah.
Just one or two other things that I noticed in the Red series.
Okay.
The double switch.
Yeah.
I think that was in game two. I want to kind of talk about. And then the other thing is related to the jobs that the batters or just, I mean, anyone on the field, the other jobs that they have on the field.
What do you mean by that? Let's talk about that first while
I
pull up Saturday's box score.
So I noticed it was a Jason Worth at bat. I don't know when it was. I think it was the Red series, but I could be wrong.
Okay. So Jason Worth in the box, whatever.
Got it. And he did something anyways, but he put his hand out to stop the third baseman from coming in for a run.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is he doing? And you were like, well, he's stopping the runner.
Yeah.
And so like, so after he said that, I've noticed that happening a lot more with other batters on whatever team.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously I'm watching the Nats. So I saw Kurt Suzuki do it today. And I saw a couple other people doing that. So like, what are some of the other jobs that they have? And when they're
right. So yeah, the batter's job in that case, when there's a runner on third and there's a wild pitch or a passed ball, is to tell him to come in because the ball's left and you have time to score, or to stop him because the person at third can't really see where the ball ends up, you know? So it's up to the person in bat to give him the clue. Just like at first and third, you have those base coaches who tell you to run or slide because you can't be turning around looking at the ball. You have to trust the guy that you're looking at. So that's one of them. Another good one is the a lot of times if you have a runner at second, the job of the guy at runner at second is to watch, because he can stand behind the pitcher but off to the side and see the catcher. So it's his job to start looking at the
the signs.
Signs that the catcher is doing and trying to figure out, okay, when he did, when he flashed two twice, that was a curveball. And maybe later in the bat, you know, so then what he can do is he's got something worked out with the batter where, you know, if Ian Desmond's back there and Danny Espinosa's in the box, he can touch like his leg when he comes out. He maybe puts his right hand on his right leg and sit. And that's how Danny knows, okay, this is a curveball.
Oh.
Or maybe the only sign he has is for fastball. So Danny's not going to get a clue
unless
it's a fastball, in which case when he comes out, maybe he brushes his shoulder or something.
Aha.
And so
I guess this, I mean, I was always kind of wondering in baseball movies, for example, A League of Their Own, you know, they're always doing those, you know, swipe across the forehead and lift up the cap and touching. And I always kind of wondered where all those things came into play. Never seen that actually happen, but this is
now you're starting to see it.
This is kind of starting to see it. So so cool.
The fun thing about baseball signs is it's a little like my French teacher used to say, you only pronounce a third of what's written. Same with baseball signs. Only a third of the signs are actually what is a sign. So it could be like, you know, because you don't want to just touch your hat when you want a guy to swing. You want to do five or six things, but he knows to look for the third thing. Or he looks to know for the third and fourth thing. And the third thing is swing, but the fourth thing is don't really swing. I'm lying. So there's a bunch of things.
Wow.
And then if there's a guy on second and the pitcher and the catcher feel like somebody's getting signs, they have a little conference. They change the signs. And now it's, okay, flashing two is no longer the curveball. Flashing one is the curveball.
So that's another reason for a little conference.
Yeah, a little conference. Okay. That and, you know, saving time for the bullpen, which I want to bring up while you bring up your next question.
No, but I just think that's fun. Like, again, as a novice in the baseball, I mean, I've definitely gained a lot of knowledge over the past year, and I'm definitely this huge baseball fan. And but again, these little teeny things that are kind of popping up that make it again just so much more interesting.
Jason Wirth's job is to position the outfield. He tells them, okay, this batter we're coming in, this batter we're going out, depending on how much power he is. So it's his job to kind of remind people.
Uh-huh.
A lot of shortstops used to put signs behind their back. I don't know if Desi does it or not, but they tell the outfielder kind of what pitch is coming. So if Desi knows what Steven Strasburg is going to throw, he's going to throw on the inside of the plate or the outside of the plate. That affects the percentage of where the ball is likely to end up.
Right.
So if it's going to be on the outside to a left-handed hitter, it's going to go towards the third base side.
And you're right. And
so what you'd want to know is, I want to take a step out to the right first as the pitch is being thrown, because if he hits it, it's more likely going to go right than left, and vice versa, and deep, you know, deep shallow, so stuff like that. So you're constantly trying to give guys clues, because of course the guys in the outfield can't see what the pitch is, you know, what the pitch is going to be. It's too far away. Anyway.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so there's tons of stuff like that.
Little things like that. I mean, and again, it's just this game, to me, becomes smarter and smarter and smarter and just – wow.
Yeah. And
how
cool
is that?
And then you get
it's
to
like a little secret society. And
it,
like,
it totally is. And then it gets to a point where if you're playing, you have to at some point let go of all those things. Because if you're thinking about all those things,
I was going
to
say,
you can't perform.
No.
So it's, you know.
At some point, you just do what you got to do. And then when you see something, you'll know it.
Right.
I would imagine. Oh, so thank you for that. So the second thing I had was a double switch, I think, in game two against the Reds.
Yeah. Which I didn't. Keep score in the second one. I'm going to go fill out my book, our Bob Carpenter scorebook. I think I'll just fill it out for completeness sake. But yeah, the a lot of people asked about this where Tyler Moore, they brought in where is it? Okay, I can't find it exactly, but the point of the double switch is – ah, there it is. No. Okay, sorry about the pause. It was the 10th inning yesterday. And there was a pitching change where Craig Stammen replaced Rafael Soriano, who then started batting fifth, replacing first baseman Chad Tracy. So during the game, Chad Tracy was batting fifth and the pitcher was batting ninth, as you'd expect.
Right.
Now, they'd gone through a handful of pitchers. They'd gone through Rafael Soriano. They'd blown the save already. And they don't have very many pitchers left. Now, where the team – Chad Tracy was the last out in the top of the 10th. He struck out swinging. So when they come in, Craig Stammen replaces Rafael Soriano on the mound, but he also takes out Chad Tracy. This is the two players in the double switch, and he puts Tyler Moore in to play first base. But instead of putting Tyler Moore in fifth, the fifth spot in the order, and the pitcher in the ninth spot in the order, he switches those two. He puts the pitcher in the fifth spot and the batter in the ninth spot. And the reason you do that is the fifth spot is now the farthest spot away in the batting order because just finished it, right?
Yeah.
You don't know how long you're going to need Craig Stammen. And what you want to do is You don't want to get to the bottom of the order next time because you're going to go, you just had the fifth spot. So the next time the Nats come up, if they come up, it's going to go 6, 7, 8. And if they get one hit or one walk, the pitcher spot's going to
be nine.
The normal pitcher spot's going to come up. It's going to be 9, and you're going to either have Craig Stammen hitting, or you're going to have to bring in a pinch hitter and then bring in another pitcher.
Right.
So instead of doing that, you put Tyler Moore in that 9th spot. And that's actually what saved them, because a lot of people were upset that, you know, why would you have why didn't you bring in Tyler Moore as a pinch hitter earlier if you're going to bring him in as a defensive sub. And this is exactly why. Because if you brought him in earlier as a pinch hitter, you wouldn't have been able to do this double switch. And what happens is the Nats get out of the bottom of the 10th. They get to the 11th where Ian Desmond homers. So where is it? Let's see. Yeah. Chad Tracy is 5th. Ian Desmond homers. Danny Espinosa lines out. Wilson Ramos Ramos homers. Then Tyler Moore is called out and strikes, and you still have a chance with Denard Span later. And then you get to the 11th inning, you don't need a new pitcher. You don't have to go. And the night before, they had used all the other pitchers, right? So Henry Rodriguez and anybody else who was used was already from last night. So you're now bringing in a guy who is, you know, Stammen's remotely fresh. He's used to using, you know, going more than one inning, and he gets the last 3 outs. So that's why the double switch was important.
Fascinating. So what kind of situations would you see that in? Are there other situations that you would see it in?
It's pretty much this kind of situation where you don't want to, when you're down by runs,
you don't want to have the
pitcher. And you don't want that pitcher spot.
Yeah. Okay.
To, you know, but you don't want to burn pitchers. You know, when you're plugging along, like Drew Storen, like it was Tyler Clipper, Drew Storen, Rafael Soriano. Mm-hmm. Those guys can all go in the 9th spot for the most part, because you're expecting those guys to get outs. But when you're in that weird wild zone of you're down a couple runs or it's getting late in the game and you don't know how long you're going to need that long reliever for, it becomes like, okay, now I, you know.
So you would expect to see this in like an 8th, probably 9th and 10th and moving forward kind of inning.
Right.
When you're down.
Yeah, you're not going to see it early. You're going to see it later. And generally you're down, or in this case you're tied but trying to get ahead, right? Because when you're playing in extra innings on the road, you're always kind of down, because if the home team ever scores, your game's over.
Okay, so next time that they are tied or possibly down and it's looking like it might...
Yeah, you can look for
that double switch. You can kind of look for that double switch.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. It also, the taxing of the bullpen on Friday night, I think cost them the game a little bit today, because Cueto leaves after 6 innings and they're tied 3-3. Strasburg is out there pitching the bottom of the 6th, even though neither pitcher had their best stuff today. And if you had and Strasburg's going up like 110 pitches now. He's thrown a lot of pitches, which, you know, he's a workhorse. He's supposed to be able to throw a lot of pitches, but he didn't have it all day. But the bullpen was used heavy yesterday in the extra innings game.
Yep.
And it was there was a lot of, you know, people thrown at the monstrosity that was the Friday night game.
Yep.
So you don't have a lot of middle relief guys that are available all of a sudden, and Davey Johnson gets caught trying to squeeze another half inning out of Steven Strasburg, and, you know, 2 of those 3 runs go to him, and Ryan Matthews comes in and gives up the 3rd, and actually before Strasburg comes in the bottom of the half, he's batting with 2 outs and 2 runners on. So if you have middle relief guys available, you don't have to have Strasburg bat. You can have a pinch hitter, put Roger Bernadine in there. He's got a chance to drive in a couple of runs and take the lead, and then you come back with these middle relief guys. But they were exhausted.
That's just kind of where it was.
You know, they were sort of beaten. I think Davey got caught trying to squeeze a little too much. Not out of Strasburg as a whole. Strasburg's going to be able to do that. He's going to be able to go deep into games. He will. I know that's a concern for people, but I feel like he's going to be able to. But maybe not so early and not with such a tax bullpen and not against such a, you know, really tough lineup like the Reds. So, yeah.
Well, okay. Well, that's all the questions I had about the Reds.
Okay.
Can we look forward?
Yeah.
Kind of leave all that behind since it wasn't so pretty.
Yeah. Well, they get a day off tomorrow, which is nice. That means when they come in and play Tuesday, everybody's rested. Adam LaRoche will be back in the lineup.
Oh, good. That's right. He had a strained back or something.
He's
like
feeling better. And he hasn't played well yet this year. You know, he's only like 0 for 13, but that's not awful. If you go 0 for 13 in the summer, most people don't really notice. But it's a little more noticeable at the beginning of the year, I think. And they'll be, you know, so they'll be at full strength on the field. The bullpen, everybody will have rested a day in the bullpen, so the bullpen will be at full strength, so you sort of get a, like a reset with the day off. Mm-hmm. Frankly, after a cruddy series like this, I feel like the reset's a good thing. They had a reset after the Dodgers series last year, and I think it helped them through May.
So we have the Sox, a three-game series against the White Sox.
Yep.
And then another three-game series against the Braves, and that's going to be the weekend.
Yeah, we're going to do a, we're gonna do some review preview on the series on the blog. I'll write out some stuff, most of which we've talked about here, which is good. And but the White Sox are going to come into town. You're going to you're gonna see a powerful hitting team with Adam Dunn, who used to play here for a number of years. He's very prone to go yard. The Nationals will send up Gio Jordan and Dan Heron. Dan Heron will get his second chance as a starter with the Nationals. Hopefully it'll go better than his first.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the Braves, you get Ross Detweiler, Steven Strasburg on Saturday for Gio Gonzalez bobblehead night, bobblehead day. And then Gio Gonzalez will pitch on Sunday. So the Nats will be sending two of their three best starters against the Braves, which everyone considers the chief rival in the NL East. So I felt like, and I wish I'd had time to write this. I was going to do it, write this up in my review preview before the Red Series, but then we had all of our car trouble yesterday or Friday. But I felt like if the Nats could win five of those nine games, win one game in Cincinnati and then win the two series at home or some combination thereof, winning five of those nine games would be good for April. I felt like that was the accomplishment. The only thing I think that would be really troublesome or really gross would be getting swept or something by the Braves, which I don't see happening. If it did happen, it really wouldn't be the end of the world, but it wouldn't feel very good to sort of get beat up by the Reds and then beat up by the Braves,
which are probably two closest.
You know, it'd be a lot harder to keep everything in perspective that it's April, even though it is April and there's plenty of baseball left. No matter what happens in April, nobody won the World Series in April yet. So I think that the Nats are going to sort of get a little bit of a break. I think the White Sox are kind of a step down from the Reds. They're not bad like the Marlins, but they're a good team, but they're not a great team. So the Nats should be able to win two of those three games, if not all three. And then you know, the second big test of the year is going to be Nats Braves, and we're going to have to get a good look at what the top pitchers too, which Gio and Straz, are going to do against the top rival at home. So really, two out of three needs to happen. That's kind of got to happen
for
them. The Nats, and then we'll go from there. Yeah.
And then we will be there pretty much the whole time.
We'll be there Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We won't be there Wednesday or Sunday.
That's right.
But we'll be there all week, getting bobbleheads and meeting people and tweeting up and we do.
And Thursday
is
sweater vest night.
Be participating in the Half Street Irregulars sweater vest night, which sounds like a lot of fun to support our friend FP Santangelo, who's a solid guy and who never really wore a sweater vest, but it looked like he wore a sweater vest that one night. And then there was a rally, and then that became the rally sweater vest meme. And now we're just going to wear sweater vests in honor of him.
And have fun.
And be silly, and have a couple of beers and hang out and hopefully get on TV and look stupid.
So that's Thursday night against the Red Sox at 7 o'clock. And if you get there before the game, if you are going to the game, if you want to join us and
we're
going to
congregate
us
near the scoreboard bar and then maybe move over to the Masson booth, which we got to figure that out with other people.
We'll
but we're going to figure it out. But I think like going near the Masson booth is a smart idea because then they'll know to look for us. But anyway, we're just looking to have fun. But you should come to as many games as you can. It's April. It's going to be a beautiful week, it looks like, weather-wise.
Yeah, weather-wise. Oh,
you're
going to
see some excellent baseball. You really will. I think that
I'm looking forward to the next two series.
Yeah, I'm hoping that
at home and everything. And
what I'm hoping to see is Adam LaRoche get a couple of hits and look more like Adam LaRoche of last year. And I'm hoping for Ian Desmond to kind of – he's got a little bug.
Shake it off or whatever.
He's got a little something he's got to shake off that I feel like, which he will. You know, it's a long season, and he was a professional last year, and I think he's going to be okay. And I'm hoping everybody else kind of keeps up with what they're doing, you know. It's coming spots, you know.
Yeah. It's a great team. It's certainly looking like a really great team. So even with these two unfortunate losses, I mean, we lost 64 games last year, so.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. And, hey, might as well get him out early.
Yeah, might as well, right?
Win in October.
I'd rather lose in April than lose in October.
That's right.
So,
good stuff.
Yeah, so how do we get a hold of me and you?
Follow us on Twitter at Nationals101.
Yep.
Comments, questions, just random ramblings at Nationals101@gmail.com.
Yep.
Follow us. We have like our Facebook page and tell others to like our Facebook page. You can find us by searching Nationals101.
It's actually Facebook.com/Nationals101.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then we are on iTunes. Look for Nationals101.
Yep.
And then shout outs to you, Frank, for actually doing an amazing job with the blog, nats101.com.
Thank you. I've had a little help. We've had Court help, and we've had Jared help, and we've had...
But you've been doing something every day. You've been recruiting people to do things, and I like to sit back and watch it. So I have no part in the blog, but it's been... You've done an amazing job.
Well, thank you.
So good job, baby.
Well, thank you, wife.
But yeah, follow us anywhere and everywhere you can.
Yeah. And we're good. And you can actually follow us personally on Twitter at The Real Frank L.
And I'm at Smeshy.
Okay. You can find that. And we usually voice some of our more personal opinions there. But we still talk about Nats there. But yeah.
Yeah. My Twitter is basically all Nats.
Yeah, you've turned into a Nats Twitter.
I'm a Nats junkie person. Yeah.
Yeah. It only took a while. But we're going to let it go. We're going to try and do another one next week. But if not, certainly within the next 2 weeks.
I think we're going to try and make Mondays our podcast days. So look for things on Tuesdays.
It's still weekly-ish.
Weekly-ish.
As we do things. As you can see, we didn't really have an object lesson today, but we felt like we should talk about the Nats. Because we have fun doing that.
Well, I learned some things.
Yeah, so, we sure did.
You know.
And knowledge is power. Until until next time, my name's Frank.
I'm Susan.
Thank you so much for joining us. Have a good week, everyone. Bye. Go Nats.